Hello, respected viewers. It's George from Ireland here. So welcome back to my channel. I'm talking about Dr. Henry Albert Kissinger. So today is the erudite doctor's 100th birthday. Some people will be wishing him a very unhappy birthday. So he's a highly contentious figure. So he was born precisely a century ago in Furt, Germany, in the state of Bavaria. And what was going on at the time? Well, the French were occupying the Ruhr because of Germany's refusal to keep their reparations payments going pursuant to the Treaty of Versailles. Germany is experiencing hyperinflation. So he's born into a bourgeois Jewish family. His father's a teacher of humanities at a girls' secondary school. So although it was quite a learned family, they'd never had much money. And there was only a tiny Jewish community in that city. So they were liberal Jews. And it seems to me that the Jewish faith and identity was never particularly important to Henry Kissinger. Indeed, Heinz Kissinger, as he was born, is claimed to have said that but for his accident of birth, he'd been an anti-Semite himself, which is a staggering thing to say. I assume that was a joke. Anyway, all was going swimmingly, and he was obviously a very bright boy, hyperlexic and the rest of it, very perceptive, until the National Socialists took office in 1923. Henry Kissinger was football mad, and young Heinz, he was forbidden to play in the main league because those weren't Aryans, were not allowed to. So but in 1938, they could really see the writing on the wall. They decided to emigrate. And they'd lived in Germany or nearby countries for centuries. I think their surname had been something else a few generations earlier. And they briefly stopped over in London. Then they went to the United States and they settled there. So they worked in New York. Obviously, his father's lost his status and had to go to doing a blue-collar job. And Heinz Kissinger, assumed the name Henry, worked part-time in a factory whilst going to school. And very quickly acquired absolute mastery of the English tongue. I've never known him to slip up once in grammar, pronunciation, anything in his writings, or indeed orally. So then he was going to the City College of New York. The Second World War intervened, and he was drafted into the U.S. Army, despite being still a German citizen. Or had his citizenship been stripped? I don't know if he was a stateless person. But people recognized that he was brainy. He was academically gifted. And of course, being a native speaker of German was a huge advantage. He's posted to Europe, and he was in Germany just at the end of the Second World War and for some time thereafter, when he proved himself invaluable as an interpreter and was carrying out quite high-level administrative tasks way above his pay grade. I think he never advanced beyond private. He was then discharged from the U.S. military honorably. He went to Harvard University, where he was a stellar pupil of the leading academics of international relations. And he later wrote a doctoral thesis on Prince Clemens von Metternich, who was, of course, the Chancellor of the Holy Roman Empire in the early 19th century, the Congress of Vienna and so on, after the Napoleonic Wars, trying to settle things. So Metternich is, of course, someone who would chill the blood of any liberal, was seen as an outright reactionary and an enemy of liberty, really an apostle of oppression, but someone who caught Kissinger's fancy and thought that rights didn't matter, that any utopian schemes to refashion the world were foredoomed to failure. Remember, quite a few of his relatives had been killed in the Holocaust, you might have thought this would make him really amenable to the notion of human rights and believe that these must be protected and the overweening power of the state must be checked, that despotism was something which must be guarded and ferociously guarded against and ferociously opposed, but quite the opposite. Anyway, each to their own. So he really became important in the late 1960s. That 1968 election, closely fought and closely fraught between Richard Milhouse Nixon, the former vice president trying to come in, and the Democratic candidate, my goodness, it was Hubert Humphrey, if I recall. And but Nixon was supposedly a part of a team that broke the Logan Act, which said that people could only engage in diplomacy on part of the United States with the express permission and the commission of the president. And the United States was negotiating in Paris with the South Vietnamese and the North Vietnamese to try and get a peace settlement. This is the dying days of the Nixon administration. It was right at the run-up to the election, and not Nixon, forgive me, of the Lyndon Baines Johnson administration. And Johnson announced he would not seek another term, but his legacy could be if he could end the conflict in Vietnam. But it's alleged that Kissinger and his acolytes, they persuaded the South Vietnamese to walk out of the talks, thereby collapsing the talks. There could be no peace agreement without them. It's convincing them that this would lead to a Republican victory. It was October surprise. So Republicans would win the election that started in November. That would usher in a Nixon administration, and they would fight very hard for the South Vietnamese and secure them either outright victory or a more acceptable deal. Anyway, this partly worked in as much as the Democrats lost, partly because of that, maybe even mainly because of that. And it was a wafer-thin margin by which Nixon won. And Nixon did come in, and he did initially escalate the war, very quickly de-escalated it, want to Vietnamize, get the Americans out, get the Vietnamese to do the fighting themselves, really persisting with LBJ's policy. So Nixon appointed Kissinger as his national security advisor. And then in 1973, that January, he signed another peace deal also in Paris with the North Vietnamese. And it was very similar to the terms of the first one. So in the intervening 4 years, well, you know, more like four and a half, tens of thousands of people died at least, to make almost no difference, almost no improvement in the American position. So he was then rewarded for this failure by being made Secretary of State. Most countries call that Foreign Secretary. He'd advised in 1971 to back the Pakistanis to the hilt against the Bangladeshi independence movement. Had it not been for that, then the Pakistani generals, they might have seen sense. These Punjabi panjandrums might have said, okay, we will make concessions, language rights, and so on for East Pakistan, Bangladesh, as it was then. And despite many very large-scale massacres of civilians perpetrated by the Pakistani military, Kissinger insisted that Uncle Sam had to back them up, as Pakistan was anti-communist. He thought that India was tinged communist just to secure air bases slightly closer to the Soviet Union. But it failed. Obviously, India won the war. Bangladesh became independent, was therefore oriented towards the Soviet bloc. They're now actually communist. So forget about morality and legality, but it was a failure even in its own terms. There was the notorious blood telegram, not to do with blood, but because the US consul in Dhaka was Archer Blood, and he and dozens of other diplomats protested, saying that the American policy with regard to East Pakistan was myopic, grossly immoral, doomed to failure, and so on. Nevertheless, Kissinger persisted with that. He'd also been in Jakarta in 1974, where he and it was then, I think, President Ford still, of President Ford, said that they approved of the Indonesians going ahead if they wanted to invade and subjugate East Timor. Yeah, go ahead, you have our imprimatur. Although we shan't say so publicly, but do so as quickly as possible. So the illegal occupation of East Timor, which the United States subsequently recognized as legally Indonesian, led to the deaths of something like one third of the entire East Timorese population, and so on. Obviously, he was the wire puller of the coup d'etat in Chile in 1973, that 11th of September coup d'etat. Admittedly, the golpe de Estado, it was executed by Chileans, but with the express approbation of the United States government, weapons and funding provided, courtesy of Uncle Sam, and so on. So he finally lost his job when Jimmy Carter came in. And actually, Ronald Reagan, who later became president, a federal Republican, he had lacerated Kissinger. So Kissinger then became this grand old man of international affairs. He was wanted on the lecture circuit. He taught at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. He made a fortune as a consultant, often providing his sage counsel to these barbaric regimes that he'd often denounced for their communism. And Christopher Hitchens wrote his superb The Trial of Henry Kissinger in about 2004, saying that his collar ought to be felt for crimes against humanity, crimes against peace, and war crimes, that these had been committed with his blessing. He'd ordered these things to be done. They were against international law, against domestic law, and on and on and on. There's just a litany of the most heinous offenses against law and morality perpetrated by one Henry A. Kissinger. Dr. Kissinger is often known, even Professor Kissinger. So it's a cruel irony that he then became a publicist for communist tyranny when he decried it for decades, and this has been supposedly excusatory of his numerous crimes against humanity. Anyway, there he is enjoying a very comfortable retirement, a multimillionaire, married for a second time. I think his wife is still with us, and we're seen as something of a sex symbol, bizarrely, dating these nubile starlets in the 70s, the end of his first marriage. So that's Henry Kissinger. Actually, you know, he screwed up a lot. Morality aside, a lot of his policies failed, ran to the ground. A lot of his prognostications appeared to be false. So he was not really a Nostradamus or even a Cassandra. So that's him, Henry Kissinger. Thanks for watching the channel. Please follow me on Patreon and donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Bye.